Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is singer-songwriter Anna Coogan. Coogan studied opera for many years, but finally found her musical home in the roots and folk music traditions. Since she started her career more than 10 years ago in Seattle, she has played hundreds of shows across the U.S., Europe, and the U.K. She has released 5 full-length records, including 2 with her band North 19, and 2 solo records, The Nocturnal Among Us and The Wasted Ocean. Her most recent is the 2012 collaboration with her touring partner, Daniela Fioschi, recorded in Rome. It's called the Nowhere Rome Sessions. And welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, we have to talk about the fact that you started out as an opera singer, studied it for over 10 years, and decided not to stick with the career. What happened?
That's a good question. I was pretty young, for one. And I could just tell it wasn't quite the right track for me. Everybody who was surrounding me was so excited and so passionate about it, and I just wanted to go skiing.
Well, how did you get into it, though? How do you get thrown into a 10-year study?
Oftentimes when you start voice lessons, you get in sort of the Broadway track or the opera track, uh-huh. And I loved it. You know, it's so beautiful and passionate to sing and stuff. So I started and really got sort of onto that track and just didn't really step off until I was about 21.
God, that's amazing to me. But it must have been good prelude for you because you're still using your voice, obviously, so it was probably good training.
Yeah, I mean, it gave me so much as far as understanding how the voice works and how to preserve it when you're on tour, for example, or singing when you're sick, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
And now that I teach it, I can sort of fall back on those years of classical study, but help people channel it in their own way so that they don't end up in a career that they're not as interested in.
Well, I'm also interested in the fact that you got a degree in biology. Now, where did this interest come from while you were studying opera?
That's a really good question. I've always loved the outdoors, and in fact, that was part of the thing that sort of pulled me away from opera, was that I always wanted to be out in the outdoors. And when I returned from living in Austria where I was studying, I was at the University of Washington in Seattle. And it was right after September 11th, and I just wanted to study something that made sense to me.
Oh.
And that was I remember just going and being like, okay, DNA makes sense to me. And chemistry didn't really make sense, but I could see how it could make sense. And physics made sense. And
So you wanted something to get rid of the chaos in some ways.
There's not that much to debate about it. Although I found out, the further I got into it, I found that's not actually true.
Yeah.
At the basics, when you start setting basic science, there's laws and principles, and you can just learn them.
Uh-huh. Has any of your interest in biology and your degree in biology translated into your music?
My 2011 release, The Wasted Ocean, is all about the sea and sort of songs about the sea, and I worked as a fisheries biologist for the 5 years preceding that record. So I think it did come into play there. But mostly the experience of actually working outdoors and working on boats and working with salmon and fishing communities, and less probably the laws and physics.
Well, I've noticed that. I listen to aspects of some of your other albums. We're going to obviously feature some excerpts from the recent one. You talk a lot about the ocean. So it makes sense that you were interested in that aspect of life.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is I did most of my work on freshwater. But it's still big, beautiful bodies of water up in Alaska and Lake Washington and Seattle. And so I've spent very little time on the actual open ocean, and I'm even pretty afraid of the actual open ocean. But I love water and just being near it. I was a whitewater kayaker.
I actually miss the ocean. I miss the California coast.
Oh, gosh, yeah. That's the most glorious.
Now, you said that after you got your degree in biology, you started having this incredible, desperate longing to go back to music. So tell us how you did that. You got into folk and roots music.
Yeah, this was all happening sort of at the same time, right after September 11th. I had given up opera and I had started studying biology, and I just thought, that's it. I'm done. I'm done with music. I don't understand it. And I was very miserable, and I just was missing, half of myself or more than half of myself. And I had a roommate who was really into indie rock, of all things. And he introduced me to a whole bunch of sort of new bands, and one of the people he introduced me to, although she's hardly indie rock, is Alison Krauss.
Oh, yeah.
And I was hooked. That was it for me. I went and I started learning all about country music, and I went to the library and got all the old, Carter Family and
Patsy Cline.
Yeah, just everything I could find. And luckily those songs are pretty easy to learn because there's only about 3 chords in them. And I just started playing on an old guitar, and going to open mics, and just kind of this whole world opened up to me.
Oh, that's so great. So you did find a musical home. We're so happy.
I did, and it's such the right place for me.
Well, I want to share an excerpt from the latest CD, the Nowhere Rome Sessions, and we're going to play an excerpt from Red Shoes, Black Dress. Tell us a little bit about that, and then afterwards we're going to talk a little bit about this album.
Sure. Well, Red Shoes, Black Dress is interesting because it's far and away my most popular song. And it's only just been put on a record, so this has been, it's about 3 years old, but we only just got to recording it.
It's very country.
It's very country. Country is having a comeback or something these days. And it's a story, and you can understand the story from the beginning to the end, and I think a lot of people, women in particular, can relate to it. After almost every show, somebody would come up to me and say, What's that song about the red shoes?
Well, let's listen to an excerpt from it.
And my red shoes on, and my black dress on, and my hair in curls, and my makeup done, and my hopes up high. I waited by the phone for you to call me up. Tell me you are coming home. I had my hopes up high. You had an alibi. You were working late. You were always working late. You were always gone. I was looking good. I was ready to go. So I gave up waiting. And I went out that door. With my red shoes on, with my black dress on, with my hair in curls, with my makeup done, I went down the road to that little bar. I got bought a drink, and I got in his car. We listened to the radio, it was playing country songs. Got to laughing, talking all night long. Then the sun came up, then the sun went down. I still am in red shoes, in my black dress on.
Tell us how you ended up cutting this new CD, and why did you do it in Rome?
Well, my touring partner that I work with in Europe and the UK is Roman, which is just really lucky for me.
Uh-huh.
And I met him through a producer, and we started working together early 2011. So it's a pretty new partnership, but it really clicked as a duo. And he plays this sort of beautiful, evocative electric guitar on top of my more dry acoustic sound. And we did a couple tours together overseas, and people really wanted us to make some kind of duo recording because that's how we toured. And so I never thought it was going to happen because Daniele is so busy and works with all these Italian pop stars and things like that.
It's a really intimate record.
Yeah.
I love that.
Well, it was a very intimate session. I mean, we had, 4 days that we could make this record in over Easter weekend.
Oh.
Yep. 3 days was actually all we really had. 4 days was kind of the complete trip.
Wow.
So I flew to Rome, and Rome is, the most romantic city in the world.
It is beautiful. I haven't been there for a long time, but I've been there,
It was incredible. And we recorded it in 2 days and mixed it in the third and kind of spilled over with the final editing in the fourth day, and that was that.
Wow, it's a beautiful CD. Tell us when you actually started seriously writing songs. That couldn't have started in your opera years, right?
No. Well, in fact, I tried to write a couple songs in high school, and they were terrible. I mean, they were really bad, and I just kind of thought, well, that's not for me. And it never crossed my mind that you could actually learn something like songwriting.
Oh, yeah.
That it might be something, a skill. It's not just something you're born with.
Uh-huh.
Once I started figuring out that, hey, maybe you don't start out perfect. Maybe you can learn. I started being a little bit more forgiving and kind of copying chord progressions that I heard in some of that earlier country music. And the very first song I ever wrote that I liked, I remember I played for my future bandmates, and they thought it was a cover. And I thought, okay.
Wow.
I'm on the right track.
Yeah. I mean, I have had a lot of singer-songwriters on, a lot of singers on and writers. And they say that they study with people, And I was thinking, there must be a way to teach this.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, teaching songwriting is one of the great enigmas, I think. I just went and saw Chris Delmhorst. I don't know if you know her, but she's a great singer-songwriter from Massachusetts. And I went to a songwriting session that she did, and she basically said, this is my first one because I don't know how to teach this. It's just magic.
But it's not just magic.
And then she showed sort of how she had done some of the songs, and it was really helpful. So that was really exciting.
Yeah. Well, I think you can teach people's techniques, but the creativity does indeed have to come into it at some point.
Yeah, and I think you can teach the discipline, honestly, about how you really need to be at it every single day, whether you're writing a novel or a record.
Yeah.
And, you know, you need to write a lot of bad records and a lot of bad songs in order to get a few good ones.
Every writer goes through that, no matter what your genre is.
Yeah.
Now, I want to ask you this. Since your background is in opera, did you change your voice in order to start doing folk music? You don't sound like you have an opera voice.
Well, I did have to change my voice quite a bit, actually, because you can't really go. You hear the opera singers sing folk music sometimes, and I don't find it.
It sounds too Broadway.
Yeah. It just doesn't really work for me. Part of the thing that you learn in opera is how to make your voice do a lot of things.
Mm.
And part of what I had to do in the 10 years between then and now is really just sort of detrain it and learn how to sing without the technique and just find out who I am when I'm not singing something from the 1800s, for example.
So you actually had to learn how to use your voice as a different kind of instrument.
Yeah, do I want gravel in it? Do I want it to be pure and, you know, do I want it to be high or low?
Whispery.
When is it whispery? When is it not?
Yeah.
Sometimes I think it's too much choice, and that if you just had never had any training, it'd be easier because you just have your voice.
You just have one voice.
Yeah.
Well, I want to play another excerpt from the Nowhere Rome sessions. This one's called Back to the World. Tell us a bit about it.
Well, Back to the World is an interesting song because I had the lyrics for that kicking around for years. Mm. And it's kind of the Mary Magdalene story, a little bit woven into a bigger story. Sometimes you just can't find the right music to a certain story. And I was at the very end of the recording session for the Nocturnal Among Us, which was the 2010 record, and I threw the words down on that particular chord progression, and we recorded it, and then it was like the opening track of that record. So
let's listen to an excerpt. This is called Back to the World. You know, you convey so much emotion in these songs. Do you ever feel like you're showing too much of yourself, especially when you sing these live?
Well, sometimes I do get extremely nervous for a live performance. So yeah, I think on some level, putting out that much emotion is a really scary thing. But on the other hand, it's kind of why you're there. You're there to tell the story, and you're supposed to be telling why the story should mean something to anybody who's just out for a drink in their local, you know, music venue. So,
if you're just joining us, my guest is Anna Coogan. She's a singer-songwriter. I know you're not pursuing your science career anymore, but do you still think of yourself as a scientist? I mean, is that still in your blood? Are you going to go back to it?
It's funny, because my husband is a scientist,
I'm
often surrounded by other scientists. I don't really consider myself one anymore, because I did never go further than a bachelor's and, you know, always worked at the sort of low level of data management and analysis. And It's science is like art. You have to have this big creative brain to think of these experiments, and my creative brain is busy.
Has moved to a new house.
Yeah. But it's a good skill to have. It's, you know, I've worked in coffee shops and I've worked in labs, and I would take the labs.
Yeah, I'm sure all these experiences has just added to your body of being able to write about your life.
Yeah, and also to be able to organize myself in order to be an independent artist, fall back on that quite a bit.
Yeah, and that is a huge challenge. I know it is.
Yeah.
To tell us about the fact that we were talking about it before, you teach voice.
Yeah.
So what are you trying to teach and convey to people?
Well, what I really try to do is to find what they want out of it. Because I think a lot of people don't really know they want to be on TV, they want to be on The Voice something, which is fine. That's a totally reasonable goal. But I try to figure out what they want and need out of a lesson and then really kind of direct them to that and find their voice. So maybe it's gravelly, maybe it's whispery. That's okay with me. I'm not teaching, you know, opera technique anymore. But I have 10 years of exercises to show people how they can expand their range and expand their vocal strength and breathe properly and...
Well, I would think some of the opera technique would help you teach people how to show that emotion.
Oh, yeah.
People are trying to communicate, right, when they're in the arts.
A lot, especially with my younger students, I have to say, like, you know, what are you saying to me? Tell me in your voice, not with the words.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll give them props, and this is a broom, you're an orphan, sing.
How has it been as a woman on the road? You know, there's still all this talk about women in music, and it's still kind of an alienating place.
It can be. I mean, I've always been treated so well by so many people, and I like traveling alone a lot of the time. I spend a lot of time on airplanes and...
And on buses, I've
heard.
And
on buses and on trains and in a lot of rental cars, and only very rarely felt alone because I was female. Mostly I'm just alone because I'm really far from home.
Yeah.
But the music industry is in so much turmoil right now. I think everybody,
men
and women, are holding on for dear life and trying to make something work for themselves.
Yeah. When do you do your writing? Is it something that you're constantly thinking about, working on, writing notes to yourself, or do you have specific times? Can you write when you're on the road?
I don't often write when I'm on the road. Usually I'm too busy with the logistics of being on the road and surviving day to day. But I write in the mornings. I usually get up pretty early and write for the first few hours if I can. And like I'm telling you, a lot of it is not very good, but some of it ends up being good and being able to be kept. And I do a lot of sort of polishing when I'm out walking my dog or riding my bike. I used to have a 7-mile bike commute in Seattle, and I did a lot of my final writing on that bike route. So some of it just, it needs to sort of simmer on its own time, and some of it you can really kind of force out in a session.
Yeah. Well, I also want to play one more excerpt from the Nowhere Rome sessions. This is a Phil Oakes cover, and it's a beautiful song. It's called The Crucifixion. Tell us what you know, seduced you to want to record this.
This song seduced me at a very young age. I probably first heard it when I was in 7th grade. My dad had Pleasures of the Harbor, which is the record that it originally appeared on. I didn't necessarily understand his version at first. I heard a version by Jim and Jean. They had this beautiful, really kind of marching, almost warlike version of this song. But then that song led me to Pleasures of the Harbor, which led me to Phil Oakes in general. And it's just such a passionate song. It's 9 minutes long, telling this incredible story of the rise and fall of John F. Kennedy. At least that's what the rumors are. Phil Oakes is no longer.
It's
alive,
a haunting. And so many people are affected by, have been influenced by Oakes.
Yeah, and I feel like he's having a little bit of a comeback now. People are talking about him, and there was a movie that came out not so long ago.
Well, let's listen to this excerpt from The Crucifixion.
To the circle-studded sky, the stars settle slowly, in loneliness they lie, till the universe explodes as a fallen star is raised. Planets are paralyzed and mountains are amazed, till they all grow brighter from the brilliance of the blaze. With the speed of insanity that he dies. In the green fields of turning, a baby is born. His cries crease the wind and mingle with the morn. An assault upon the order, the changing of the guards, chosen for a challenge that is hopelessly hard. And the only single sound is the sighing of the stars. But to the silence of distance they are sworn. So dance, 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 teach us to be true. Come dance, 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 'cause we love you.
You know this song so moves me, and you know I have heard the rumors that it was about JFK too, and it's so haunting to me. I love your version.
Thank you. It's really dark. I've lost myself in this.
And you recorded this live too.
This particular recording is just a magic. Somebody happened to be recording that show. It was at a monastery in Holland. This beautiful, beautiful monastery, where they hold shows now. We really got lost in the song on this particular performance.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful version of it. Do you feel, as somebody who writes folk music and roots music, that politics should be part of your scheme of things? And yeah,
I think it absolutely can be. I don't think it has to be. I certainly don't think it should be for every song.
Right.
When I first started out, I had very political songs. I had a song called Fire in the Mountain that people still request today that's about sort of where American society is at, and it really kind of got me.
You need to resurrect that right now.
I'll record you a new copy of it. I don't know if there's any existing copies of it. But as I continued, I did sort of drift away from that a little bit, because I spent so much time listening to the news. I'm a real NPR junkie, that I kind of felt like in my music I needed some peace from that. I needed to talk about my own feelings about the world, but a little bit more disguised than the original way I used to sing them.
So do you feel like now that you have a more domestic life, you've settled down here in Ithaca, do you need that to write, or would you rather have more of an upheaval of a life and moving back and forth and traveling?
I think that the upheaval helps, but I think that the domesticity and sort of the calm actually allows it to come out in a much safer way. You know, it allows me to write every day and practice every day and really teach and kind of give back in a way that I never could before. You know, I lived in 12 different houses in Seattle. I just moved every year and really kept things kind of light. But I'm ready for it. I think you hit a certain age and you're just ready to be a little bit calmer.
Well, what kind of relationship do you have with audience?
Well, it really varies from show to show. A lot of times it can be a really great relationship and you feel a lot of love, and a lot of times you don't. And I think what you have to do is kind of learn to give the same show and trust yourself that you know your material and that you are who you are, and they can take it or they can leave it.
Yeah.
And they do both. They really do. So, but anybody who sort of, you know, joined my fan base and stuck around just means everything. You know, they're the people that really count. So.
Yeah, and you're building an audience as you go along, right?
I mean, yeah. Obviously. I mean, that's the hope. If you're not building an audience, there's not too many perks.
How do you get airplay these days? How does an independent sell his or herself? Yeah. Is there a way to do that now? It seems so haphazard.
It seems to be pretty haphazard. I wish I had a more clear answer on that one. I have hired radio promotion in the past, and that's been pretty successful on some levels. But I think sometimes you just kind of have to have that record that hits the right ears at the right time, and they kind of start the fire from there, you know. Our records have had a nice amount of success in the UK and in Europe, and some good radio play in the States too, so I'm very grateful for that. But sometimes it's hard to know how to have it happen all at the same time so that all of a sudden you're making a steady career out of
it. Yeah, I mean that's the challenge. What kind of songs are you working on right now? You must be working on some.
Oh, I've got this huge batch of songs, and none of them will finish the way I want them to, and they're all just kind of stuck in me. I was hoping to have them ready for this big show I have in Seattle in a couple weeks, but I think I'm going to have to just wait until they're ready. Songs about, you know, they're about traveling and a lot about being lost in London. I spent a lot of time being lost in London in the last year.
Literally lost or
literally
just mentally lost?
I guess we always sort of knew where we were, but no, there was a fair amount of actual lostness, carrying huge amounts of luggage and guitars and...
Wow, Lost in London. That's the title of a song, I'll bet.
Yeah, it's just kind of a romantic city, just like Rome.
I mean, I know, and London's a beautiful place. I love it. Well, what do you actually look for in a song, though, if you're going to do a cover? Are you looking for melody or lyrics that touch you, or something you know the audience would be moved by?
Well, I don't do that many covers, and one of my New Year's resolutions is to do more covers, so I'm going to have to think about that harder. The Crucifixion is something that I just wanted to do, because I loved that song from childhood, and then The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald is another song
I
adore that song, and part of the reason I wanted to cover it is because it's such a beautiful story, and it's a story that's just so well told in that particular...
Yeah, I know.
15-verse song, or what, 16 verses, whatever it is. But I think in the future I might be looking for songs that kind of appeal to an audience, just to kind of reel them in.
I want to play one more excerpt from the Nowhere Roam sessions. This one's called The Crooked Sea. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Crooked Sea is a breakup song, plain and simple. And it was luckily not about a breakup that I was going through. And I wrote it probably about 2009, and it was kind of the first of the series of songs that I wrote for my solo records, and one of those ones that when I wrote it, I thought, okay, I'm ready to start.
And it's another sea song.
It is.
Going back to your love of the water.
And the funniest thing is when we play this song overseas in places where English is not the first language, I always get the question, what does Crooked Sea mean? And what does crooked mean?
I find it a really poetic title.
It's just kind of a poetic thought about a place.
It reminds me of the
sea in
peril.
I have to describe crooked.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's for every person it brings up a different image, but I need to bring a dictionary to understand how to actually explain the definition of crooked.
Well, let's listen to an excerpt from it.
When we sail, it'll be by the shores of the crooked sea, by the docks and by the rails, by the ships with their crooked sails, by the stars with their dying light, their lonesome cries keep me up all night. I know you watch. You're watching me. Don't own you. Don't want to. You let me be. Let me be.
Do you find different reactions in places like Europe where people don't understand the language? Do you perform differently because of that?
Sometimes, but sometimes I'm absolutely amazed. In Germany and Holland, so many people came up to me and said, I want that song about JFK, which of course is the Crucifixion, or what does Crooked Sea mean, or did you suffer, you know, and I don't get asked those questions as much here, so I think people really, really listen when they need to be doing some translating in their heads.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have any gigs that you're going to be doing in the local area, in the region, anytime soon?
You know, I'm doing a tour out to the West Coast is my next project, and I'll be playing at the Living Room in New York on January 22nd. Locally, I don't have anything lined up until I'll be doing the Joni Mitchell tribute night in March, early March.
Oh, nice.
So, but I add shows all the time. So if you just check out annacoogan.com, I'm also on Facebook and Twitter.
And so they can get copies of your CDs through your website.
Absolutely.
And find out where you're going next.
All of them are for sale on my website. And if you're overseas, they're for sale through Continental Records, which is our overseas label.
Okay. Well, Anna Coogan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
This has been great, and good luck with the future career. Keep up the great work.
Thank you. You too.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.